This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
On January 29th of 2022, a phone left a rental house on Potomac Avenue in Jacksonville and went for a drive. An FBI agent traced the route for the jury on the fourth day of Mario Fernandez's murder trial. The phone traveled south toward Jared Breidigan's neighborhood, then to the gymnastics facility his kids use, then out to Jacksonville Beach. The phone belonged to Henry Tenen, the man prosecutors say was hired to kill Jared Breidigan. The rental house belonged to Mario Fernandez, the man they say did the hiring. As Tenen's phone ran that route, an FBI agent, Bobby Blythe, testified Fernandez's phone was pinging around the Potomac property. Blythe does cellular analysis for the FBI. Tower records and GPS data let him place a phone inside a radius of a few meters, and he spent 2 hours placing those two phones for a jury based on the records of which the tower recorded them with the GPS data, lining it all out for the jury to see. 18 days later, Jared Breidigan was ambushed and killed in Jacksonville Beach after these phones kind of did the same route, it seems. Handful of days earlier, prosecutors called January 29th a practice run. The defense calls it a work day and points to surveillance showing Fernandez meeting contractors and hauling construction materials at that property. The jury's read on that one Saturday may decide this trial. The defense had a strong fourth day, and almost all of it came from what's missing. Lead Detective Chris Johns agreed on cross-examination that no DNA ties Fernandez to the blue Ford F-150 linked to the ambush. He agreed no fingerprints, no surveillance footage put Fernandez inside that truck. The gun gave them more of the same. Prosecutors allege Fernandez got a 10-millimeter handgun from John Biggerstaff, a friend he'd known since high school. Johns conceded there's no physical evidence any handoff happened and the weapon has never been found. Investigators wanted that gun badly enough to offer Biggerstaff immunity if he'd say he supplied it. He declined. Biggerstaff's son was a Texas police officer, and in December of 22, agents sent him to wear a wire against his own father. No gun ever surfaced. The rarity argument took a hit, too. ATF agent Mike Stengel acknowledged that Glock made multiple 10-millimeter models. And then investigators found records of six 10-millimeter purchases at one Jacksonville gun store alone. Jesse Dreicher even went after the boots investigators pulled from Tenen's truck in Fernandez's home. Johns acknowledged he couldn't rule out that other boots might match the surveillance footage, though he said the flaps on these matched it better. The defense had an answer on timing, too. Breidigan died on Wednesday evening, driving away from a custody exchange. And Dreicher pointed out that the Wednesday schedule sat in public court filings. Anyone who pulled the docket would learn which night to expect him. Every item on that list belongs to a different job than the one Fernandez is charged with. Prosecutors have never claimed he drove the truck or fired the gun. In the state's theory, that work belonged to Henry Tenen, who withdrew his guilty plea in February and faces his own jury in March of 27. Fernandez is charged with first-degree murder and solicitation to commit a capital felony. Solicitation works like this, and why so many of these points that don't seem to add up were never meant to add up. But if you're a defense attorney and you have to convince a jury to go to reasonable doubt in some way, shape, or form, you're going to intentionally pitch things to them that don't have an answer. Well, his DNA's not on the tire. DNA's not on the gun. Yeah, well, he's never in question to be there to begin with. So let's not sit here and act shocked about it not being there. But if the jury that doesn't follow the case doesn't know that, they might too be shocked. Well, that doesn't make any sense. He's accused of this, right? No, not directly. He's not accused of being in that car, pulling the trigger, everything. No, he's accused of orchestrating this, the conspiracy end of it. So, ooh, it's spooky. He's not on this stuff. Well, it's not part of the argument to begin with. Fernandez is charged with first-degree murder and solicitation to commit a capital felony. Solicitation works like this. One man asks another man to commit a crime and offers him something for doing it. If the killing happens, Florida law lets the state charge the man who asked with the murder himself, or asked for the murder himself, to basically be charged with the murder. That's how Fernandez can face a murder count without anyone claiming his finger touched a trigger. Those charges draw the map of what prosecutors have to prove: direction, communication, and money. An orchestrator's DNA doesn't belong in the truck because the orchestrator was never supposed to be near the truck. The absence the defense spent hours building is the same absence the state's theory predicts. 20 years of crime television trained juries to expect a swab and a match before they'll convict anyone of anything. Fernandez lawyers know it. And a full day of missing fingerprints aims straight at that reflex. It invites 12 people to grade this case against the gunman's checklist while the man in front of them is accused of writing the plan. The day still cost the state something real. In October 22, ATF agents used location data from Tenon's phone to find the blue truck at the home of a man named Jimmy Jones. A find that agents described as a major break. Then investigators never searched Jones' property for the missing gun, and they never collected DNA from Jones. Stengel and Johns, both admitted it on cross. On redirect, prosecutor Christina Stifler walked Johns to an answer. He testified that investigators received information in 23 that the murder weapon was destroyed shortly after the shooting. The defense disputes that account, and the jury is left weighing a secondhand explanation against a search that never actually took place. So the case comes back to the evidence pointed at Fernandez himself, and it starts with a lease. Tenon rented a house Fernandez owned in northwest Jacksonville, about 25 miles from the street where Breitigan actually died. The alleged hitman and the alleged hirer were connected before a single shot was fired through rent. The arrest warrant lays out the state's timeline. Prosecutors allege the plot began on November 1st of 21. They say Tenon joined it on January 4th, 22. The very next day, Blythe's data shows Tenon's phone sitting within a few meters of Fernandez's own home. The timeline keeps moving through January. On January 25th, Blythe's data puts Fernandez's phone at Biggerstaff's home for nearly 3 hours. Searches for 10-millimeter firearms show up on Biggerstaff's account 4 days later. The same Saturday, Tenon's phone ran the route past Breitigan's world. The why in the state's telling comes from a custody war. Jared's widow, Kristen Breitigan, testified the fight with the ex-wife Shanna Gardner ran so deep that there was absolutely no trust, so everything was in writing. A friend told investigators Gardner believed her husband Fernandez could take care of Jared because of his military background. The jury had heard Fernandez's own voice on the subject. In a 2022 police interview played earlier in the trial, he called Breitigan a keyboard warrior. After the murder came the money. Fernandez wrote 10 and 3 checks, $2,000, $3,000. Dated March 28th, 22, and 5,000 dated April 4th, about 6 weeks after Breitigan died. One memo line referenced landscaping, another read Kickstarter, good luck. Prosecutors say the checks dressed up payment for killing as yard work. It's an interesting way to pass off checks. The defense reads the same paper a little differently. The checks, it says, covered legitimate work on Fernandez's properties, and one memo line may actually say roofing. Maybe there's a little of both going on there, actually. Maybe some of it is actual work. And that's part of the play. That's part of the mask up here. The state played phone calls on the fourth day as well. In late January 23, the days around Tenon's arrest, recorded calls caught Fernandez discussing that arrest with his friend Carlos Flong. He testified he had no idea anyone was listening. The first call touched Gardner's separation from Fernandez and her move across the country. On the call, I mean, the day after the arrest, Fernandez said of Tenon that he was honestly trying to remember any recollection of him. The phone records say the remembering shouldn't have been that hard. By the arrest warrant's account, Fernandez and Tenon had 35 phone contacts in February 2022 and 30 more in March. So this whole I don't remember you thing. Well, who's on your phone communicating with him? Bly's testimony then reached the day before the murder. On February 15th, Fernandez's phone spent almost an hour at Tenen's residence from just after 4 p.m. until nearly 5. For roughly half of it, the two devices overlapped in the same spot. Kind of shoots the whole I don't know him thing out the door. The night of February 16th, license plate readers caught the blue truck three separate times. And between 7:11 and 8:19 p.m., Fernandez's phone produced records at all. Just off the map, you know, like Koberger. The shooting happened around 7:45, squarely inside that silence. Blythe told the jury the pattern is consistent with the phone powered off or set to airplane mode. By the end of the day, the defense had two kinds of answers on the table. For the gunman's evidence, it had subtraction. And for the routes and the checks, it had stories. A renovation day, a roofing bill, a story can be weighed and picked apart in a jury room. The 65 phone contacts, the hour at Tenen's house on the 15th, and the phone that went dark while Jared Breitigan was dying, all wait for the defense's turn with Blythe. That fight happens on the state's ground. The plan and the money where the defendant actually lives in this case. Testimony is continuing. Gardner faces Shanna Gardner, her, the one behind me on that graphic if you're watching us on YouTube, faces her own jury starting at the end of August. They're planning to wrap up Mario probably within the next week. She's on deck. This is kind of almost like a preview of what is to come, or not. She's also charged with first-degree murder in the same killing. Tenen's trial waits till 2027, the man who actually is accused of the shooting. Whether the jury decides, or whatever, really, the jury decides about January 29th, the route itself sits in evidence. A phone traced a father's world on a Saturday afternoon. His street, his kid's gym, the beach town where he'd die. On February 16th, along the same stretch of territory, someone laid a tire in the road and waited for Jared Breitigan to stop. All a big coincidence? Or something far darker? Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Is there a world where Mario and Shanna have nothing to do with this? Is there a world? I'm trying to see it. There's a lot of holes in evidence, but the overall picture is pretty grim, in my opinion. Did Mario and Shanna, if they did it, put enough blocks between themselves and Tenen to not end up taking the rap for the murder? That's really what the question is. Or they didn't do it at all. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. Be sure to take us along with you wherever you are listening to podcasts. Right there, that is the QR code. It'll take you to our podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening. Go ahead, hit that, hit subscribe, and take us with you. And we'll continue our conversation in the comment section. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.